Jade the Mad, and with me, as always, is the one and only Alice Alistair. Hi, Alice.
What's up, y'all?
How are you?
I am doing the do. How are you?
Doing the do. Okay. Are we talking Mountain Dew?
I wish, honestly. Like, I could totally go for some Pitch Black right about now.
Ooh, Pitch Black. Yeah. That's a spotty one, isn't it? Like, they kind of put it on the market and take it off the market. Hard to find.
Yeah. I mean, fingers crossed and shit. I mean, it's been a few years and 2020 since, but, like, last I heard, it beat out Baja Blast as a forever flavor. I mean, still probably not, you know, like, you got to go to, like, that 7-Eleven on that street corner to find it, but.
Sure. Yeah. Mountain Dew is crazy like that. I mean, I don't want to skew off on too big of a tangent here, but, like, there are some nut jobs out there. I don't know if you were aware, like, when Voodoo came out, like, two Halloweens ago, you could not find that shit anywhere.
Which one was that one?
It was, like, supposed to be, like, a mystery flavor, but people kind of said, oh, it's, like, candy corn flavor or, like, cotton candy flavor or something.
Oh, wow.
I liked it. It was really good, you know, when you could find it. And then, now their new flavor is, like, Melon Mania or some shit like that, so.
Was that,
it's like... It's good. It's not as good.
You said Voodoo?
Yes.
Like V-E-W-D-E-W?
Almost. V-O-O-D-E-W. Voodoo. Oh. All
right, that's fine.
Voodoo the hoodoo that you do. Anyways. So, yes, I'm fine. I, just living la vida loca.
Not living moss. You don't have any Taco Bell with you.
Oh God, I wish. Okay, we must be hungry or thirsty or both.
Bring Baja Blast now.
Dip into my emergency Taco Bell fund.
For real.
Yeah. So moving on from our. The conversation that our stomachs apparently really want to have. This is episode 2.2 of us, you know, kind of deep diving a little further into the elements of astrology. Last episode, we kind of covered the signs. You all walked through the zodiac with me as I tried desperately to find where the fuck Virgo sat in the zodiac, only to discover that I was being betrayed and led astray by my very own ruling planet. So we're going to just dive right in. We'll talk a little bit about, I think first we can kind of talk about what it means to be, like, fixed and cardinal and mutable. We will talk about how the signs are generally associated with some sort of element, meaning for us, meaning fire, water, earth, and air. And then we'll talk more about aspects and what those mean. And we'll dive more so into what the houses, not necessarily what each house is, but its sort of significance in a birth chart. So give us the Cliff Notes version, like, as far as what it means to be a fixed, because each sign, right, is going to be associated with an element as well, and give us the rundown on what it means to be, like, a fixed air sign or a mutable air sign or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the interesting dimensions is how the signs relate to each other, and as you mentioned, the signs can be related by the elements. There are three of each of the elements, three fire signs, three earth, da-da-da-da-da, and that element of three is related to cardinal, fixed, and mutable signs. So the cool thing about the interaction of the cardinality, etc., and the elements is just, like, additional flavor to each of the signs, in my opinion. There's plenty of other ways to think about it than that. But you've got fire signs being kind of the energetic, inspiring, and maybe, like, enthusiasm-oriented signs, like ideas and possibilities. Ideas has too many meanings, because if I say the same thing in the context of air, air signs are a little bit more oriented to maybe conceptual realities and considering different possibilities of, like, thought and concept as ideas, quote-unquote.
Sure. Okay.
Earth signs are generally processes that are associated with getting shit done in one way or another, tangible accomplishment or interaction with, like, tangible realities. And that's not to say that earth signs can't be philosophers or motivational speakers or anything like that. It's just those processes tend to be a little bit more getting things done.
Yeah.
And then water is kind of the emotional spectrum of the zodiac. I hesitate to say that, or I say it with that inflection, just because there are emotions in fire and earth and air, and like, it's not just the water signs who feel feelings. Even though some of them do feel a lot of feelings. but they are often associated with, like, those layers of the psyche and our ability to interact with other people on those levels, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Sweet. And then bringing that in, it's like you've got cardinal, fixed, and mutable signs. This one is one that's like, I gotta brush up on where this stuff actually comes from. But the idea is that cardinal signs are a little bit more associated with beginning things, or just, like, taking the initiative to do something different, or, like, marshalling of energies, whereas fixed signs are more, like, continuing to do whatever it is that they're doing, so they're a little bit more inclined to, and I don't mean this in a negative way necessarily, like, inertia or, like, stasis, kind of.
Sure.
Yeah, being stable.
Yeah.
And then the mutable signs are the ones that are most, like, adaptable and, like, transition-oriented. Because some of this idea is coming from the idea of the zodiac as a cycle. And everything moves from a cardinal to a fixed to a mutable, such that there is a beginning of some sort of process, the continuation and, like, culmination of that process, and then once that process is done, reorienting to begin a new phase. If that kind of makes sense.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. That was that was beautifully explained. Yeah.
Sweet. So Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn, those are our cardinal signs. You've got Taurus, oh goodness, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius as our fixed signs, and then the mutable signs, Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, Pisces.
Huh. Okay.
So don't necessarily worry too much about that if you're somebody who's just tuning in and, like, absorbing a lot of this information for the first time.
Right.
Like I said,
it's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot.
To me, it's kind of like it, like, adds depth to your understanding of your sign or your placements or the signs in general, once you kind of understand what the signs are, I think.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think it does get to a point where it became obvious that like, when people figured out the Zodiac and started making astrology, like, a big thing, that they were like, oh my gosh, there's so many answers. We have to tear everything apart and look at everything all over again because it all means something. And so now we have, you know, degrees and houses and elements and qualities to those elements. And it's...
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many layers to it. And hell.
And all because we just couldn't bear to not know who we are, who we're meant to be. We had to look to the stars to tell us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing what the shit we can come up with.
Right? So that just leaves us with houses, right?
Houses and aspects. The houses, if you're looking at a circle chart, those are the inside little pie pieces. Luckily, there are 12 of them, like there are 12 of the signs. And the big thing that I will say is that with the houses, people will oftentimes interpret them as like aware. So you've got sun as our example. What are like need to be vitalized by a certain kind of activity, the sign that it is in, and maybe also the way that we can share our radiance with other people, being our sun sign in whatever way we're trying to be our sun sign. And then, so sun in Gemini in the fourth house, for example, versus sun in Gemini in the ninth house or something like that. The house can represent a very like tangible arena of life experience where you are doing that Gemini thing.
Okay, yeah.
And then the idea of what the houses mean, where, like, what they're significating, this is the caveat that I have to give, just because that's where the field of astrology is right now, is that old school astrology had very different understandings of the houses than more contemporary forms of astrology. And by that, I'm saying from like kind of from the 1600s on. Like, I was reading a book from the 1600s, and it kind of surprised me that some of what we in our times associate with those houses did go as far back as that. But at the same time, it's very obvious that a lot of like reinterpretation and modernization has happened since then.
Okay.
So you remember how we were talking about whole signs being a thing from our Hellenistic ancestry? Have you ever heard of the 12-letter alphabet?
No, I have not. Tell me more.
Excellent. So this is a controversial thing just because, again, modern ideas do not always line up with less than modern ideas. But it's important that we're able to see what's going on with these things because a lot of modern astrology will consider the houses to be really direct extensions of the signs and their ruling planets. So Aries, first house, and Mars, Aries being the first sign, first house being the first house, and then Mars just being the ruler of Aries, they form one of the letters of the 12-letter alphabets.
Oh.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
So on the one hand, it's really convenient because it's like, oh, all three of these things line up, so that if you know what's going on with the sign and the planets, each of the houses, as it lines up with the signs in the zodiac, like, it means something similar.
Okay.
Again, that's a convenience thing, and personally, I like that one a lot because it does have a lot of interpretive power that is easily accessible. That said, the only real problem with it is that Hellenistic astrologers will say that, oh, the houses meant things that don't necessarily line up so cleanly. So use some caution there.
Do you mind just, like, covering what the first house relates to, then, in terms of being with Aries and Mars?
Sure. I mean, hell, let's look at 1, 4, 7, and 10, if that's all right, just because those four are, like, they are often given specialty status in some ways as being the most powerful of the houses. Part of that is because they are the horizon lines, east and west horizon, and then mid, like, noon, like the zenith of the sky, and then the farthest down point, the absolute bottom of the sky, invisible. So even all of that is rich with symbolism.
Sure.
With the horizon lines, the ascendant, first house, Aries, all that stuff ends up becoming really core to self, identity, and one's role in the world just as an individual. And then by extension, the opposite point there is other people, partners. That's pretty intuitive, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, well, actually, I think I'll hold back what I was about to say, because we're going to talk about it in our Aries episode.
Ah, yes. Be sure to tune in. So you've got that self and other dichotomy on the first house, seventh house axis that we were just talking about there, and that relates back to what we were saying about seventh house being a partner-oriented house. That lines up with Libra and Venus, where Libra is a partnership-oriented sign, and Venus is a partnership-oriented planet. So, bam, all three of them in one place.
Perfect. I love it.
The last little bit, and we won't go too far, is just, again, the dichotomy between midheaven and the most invisible point below the Earth, where it's like, okay, that's Capricorn way up top, which is often associated with one's role in society, one's social status, things like that, where it's like your public life in some ways. And then down on the other side, Cancer, the fourth house, and the moon can be seen as, you know, you in the privacy of your home, like your most enclosed and protected self.
Okay, perfect. Yes. Cancer, like the crab that that grabs and clings and doesn't let go.
Yes, hidden within the shell.
Yes. Okay. I love that. There's so much rich symbology in the zodiac. I'm going to love diving into more of how the symbols actually came to be and, you know, seeing kind of how things line up in that regard when it comes to these, like, beings or animals or whatever, and the traits that they possess that sort of, you know, give you hints and clues about what to expect from them.
Yeah, it's such a unique language because of all of that, it's just so fucking dynamic.
Yeah, oof, dynamic, yes, absolutely. tell me about Placidus,
yeah,
real quick.
So there are also a lot of different ways to calculate the houses. the planets are out there. We see the planets. The zodiac, way back however many thousand years ago, the Babylonians decided we're going to do 30 degrees each for each of the signs. The houses were a lot more proximal, like local. If I understand correctly, the houses have their origin in this idea of dividing the times of the day, basically. So,
okay.
Kind of even going back to ideas of, like, who's got morning shift, who's got noon shift, who's got the late afternoon shift kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And so it's very non-standard compared to, like, the Zodiac, where it's just 30 degrees each, unless right. you're using a house system that is specifically calculated that way. And there might be at least a dozen different ways of calculating houses. Long story short, a lot of people use Placidus by default, and there are a lot of people who are not happy with that and argue that we should be using whole sign houses or something like that. The houses are a very divisive part of astrological practice.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, that's good to know.
Houses are in terms of literal physical stuff and just conceptual framework, as well as some of the discrepancies between older ways of thinking about the houses and more contemporary ways of thinking about the houses. This is where I would place a lot of my attention before aspects, even, because it's like no matter what your sun, moon, and rising are, if you've got some sort of emphasis on the seventh house, you probably have a really important space in your life for your partnerships. Like, you know, they're lone wolfy type people and people who don't necessarily go through, like, really intense phases of how their relationships were affecting and influencing their lives. Some people do. And even if they don't have, like, a strong Libra placement or something otherwise that would say, oh, this person is all about people, this is a people person, astrologically speaking, just having that seventh house highlight, knowing that that's there, can be like, oh, okay, I see why that's going on there. Likewise, yeah. For, you know, something with the 10th house being like, oh, this person's vocational calling means a whole lot more to them than somebody who doesn't have a loaded 10th house.
Hmm. Okay.
And then our last piece of the big puzzle for now, the aspects. So again, if you're looking at a circle chart, all those colorful lines and sometimes dotted lines and all that stuff that link the planets to each other, those are the quote-unquote aspects. And so those really just represent different qualities of relationships between the planets in a chart. Traditionally, there are good and bad aspects, air quotes around both of those, because having a planet in one sign and another planet in a different sign that maybe has a very different agenda than that first sign. Let's say, like, Capricorn and Cancer, for instance. They are 180 degrees apart. In the broad sense, Cancer is very home and emotion-oriented, broad strokes. Uh-huh. And Capricorn is very work and maybe setting aside one's feelings to get shit done, or something along those lines. So you can see right. there might be some tension between those. That's a part of what's being gotten at by aspects.
Right. These are, like, on a very basic level, these are, when you're looking at a list of your aspects or whatever, it gives you a degree, like an angle, mm-hmm. that these planets are sitting from each other. And it tells you, like, I mean, obviously, if we're talking about, in that exact example, planets being in opposition to each other, like, that is literally what it's called, is that they're in opposition, which that kind of has that connotation, being opponents with one another.
So exactly.
It's helpful to know, I guess, ultimately, where your strengths are going to be and where your weaknesses are going to be, because that's kind of where your aspects come into play, right?
That's a part of it. And also thinking just about how the different parts of your life and psyche might be interacting with each other. Like, are they interacting in a way that's like reinforcing each of the individual parts, or are they creating tension perhaps? Going back just a little bit to the whole good and bad aspects thing, like that's another thing that a lot of modern astrologers, or at least some modern astrologers, have tried to reframe in saying there's no such thing as a good or bad aspect. Your whole chart is good, ultimately. Right. But it just might not feel so smooth. It might not flow as easily in certain parts of your life. Or in certain parts of your life, it does flow really easily, and even that might not necessarily be a good thing in and of itself. Like, just as an example, maybe you've got a Mercury trine something really spicy like Mars, and it just flows out your mouth to say really spicy things, and that might not always be the most harmonious of traits, you know?
Yes, yeah. I feel like you're talking about me, but moving on.
So we spent some time talking about how our aspects can denote different flavors of relationship between different points in a chart, different planets, where maybe there's a really harmonious relationship and whatever these two points are doing, they're reinforcing each other, or maybe there's some tension. Some of the big aspects that we're always looking at are the conjunction, which is where you have two or more planets in the same place in a chart or really close together, so they're all in the same zone. You have the opposition, which is pretty intuitive, like opposites literally 180 degrees apart from each other, because this is still 360 degrees of a circle. You have the trine, which is 120 degrees apart, so it forms a kind of little triangular angle. And then you have the sextile, which is 60 degrees apart. All of these can have rankings in terms of their power. Aspects like the conjunction, the opposition, the square, and the trine are all thought to be like major aspects, so they're having the most influence between each other. Whereas even like the sextile kind of is on the bridge between major and minor at that point, where some people will consider that one to be a major aspect and say that it's playing a big role in how things are interacting. Whereas some astrologers will leave that one out altogether, and then all the other aspects, because there's still like a fuck ton more, and we're not even going to go there today. those ones, all of the minor aspects do exist, and it's kind of a grab bag in terms of whether or not you're trying to look at too many goddamn details, or like trying to flesh out more details in a maybe kind of ambiguous picture. I don't know. How does that sit?
I think that's a pretty good summary of it. I don't think maybe when we do our episode on aspects, we can get into more of those like major and minor aspects. I know that sometimes in most birth charts, you're probably going to see your list of aspects talking about how something is like in conjunction to one of your nodes or to like your midheaven and that kind of thing, which we're not even going to touch on in this episode. They do exist. Feel free to learn and read up on them at your own pace. But for this episode, we're not really going to touch on or talk about any of those, because it's too deep, it's too specific, and it really does probably warrant an episode all of it on its own. That being said, I am kind of curious for you personally, Is there one of those aspects that you find more relevant to your birth chart, or like when you're doing birth chart readings for somebody else, are you more like, I don't know, excited or, you know, anything to see that this person has like a really powerful trine or like a really hard square aspect, or like is there a certain aspect that you're paying more attention to than others for you personally?
Great question. When I first started doing astrology and learning about astrology, I spent way too much time looking at all the different aspects. And you can get so much information out of the aspects. Like, if you know that your moon is interacting with Mars and look up what that means, it's just like, oh, holy shit. Like, the called out factor that just exists in learning something like your big three, or knowing what house one of your big planets is in, like, that's one thing, but we're talking several magnitudes of influence higher to just, like, see which planets are interacting and be like, oh, damn. That said, it can be TMI so fucking quickly, and I didn't realize that you could get a pretty comprehensive reading of a chart without even looking at the aspects that much at all until I got several readings of my own, and was just like, okay, these motherfuckers didn't highlight the aspects barely at all, or when they did, it was for very specific purposes. And so now it's like I tend to de-emphasize the aspects to begin with, and then use them as, you know, like, filling in the details kind of information.
Interesting. Huh. That's really fascinating.
I mean, your mileage might vary. I highly encourage you to do your own thing, and you'll quickly see what I mean. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That sounds exciting and scary.
All right, good. That's how it should sound.
So I guess I think that's really great. We're obviously going to do a deeper dive into these elements as we continue. The signs we will address individually as we come to them. So like next week we're going to be starting a two-part series on Aries and talking about our lovely Mars people, right?
Yeah, Martians. Well, now that we've gotten all of that lovely information out of the way, I'm feeling like I would like to go down a rabbit hole.
Ooh, okay. Let's go down the rabbit hole. Are you ready?
Bring it on. Okay. I've got my tea and everything.
Good. So, for today's rabbit hole, we're not going to do the whole thing, but have you ever bothered to participate in the Proust questionnaire?
What even the hell is that?
Are you familiar at all with the Proust questionnaire?
No, not at all. This is exciting.
Okay. Well, Marcel Proust was he's a French novelist. I think he was like a philosopher too.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. He's not like a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anything like that. But this is basically the Proust questionnaire is questions that some people believe reveal like characteristics of your personality, just based on how you answer them. And his were just famous because he has a very, like, what's the word I'm looking for? A very, like, quintessential, unique style about him to answering these questions. And then, you know, he answered these questions way before he became famous or became a novelist or anything like that. So they were discovered. His answers were discovered after the fact and became a whole thing. Nowadays, most people probably see the Proust questionnaire come up because the magazine Vanity Fair uses it quite often. I think it's like on the back page of their magazine when they always ask celebrities and stuff. My first introduction to the Proust questionnaire was actually from Inside the Actor's Studio. James Lipton, you know, he sits in with a celebrity guest and they talk about projects that they've worked on, and it's all very kind of like posh and prestigious and whatnot, but they end by asking questions from the Proust questionnaire. So I'm going to have you answer some of them.
Alrighty.
Let's see. And there's like, I think there's about 35 questions, but we're not going to do all of them. So, first off, what is your idea of perfect happiness?
Goodness. I'm hesitating now because I'm like, am I allowed to say that? Am I allowed to say that? Do I want to say that?
It does not technically have to be deep. It could be, what is your idea of perfect happiness in this exact moment? Is it a hot shower? Is it a good meal? Like, what? Or it could be, you know, ultimate contentment with oneself, or, you know, finding nirvana, whatever.
I'll say some real catchy music. That would be at the top of the list.
Yeah. The idea of perfect happiness. I mean, music is strong and powerful. It definitely has the ability to influence moods. So I could see that for sure. Let's see. How about, which living person do you most admire?
That's going to take me some thinking.
Yeah. It is kind of a tough one. I'm a, like, head in the sand kind of person. There are people that I know who I admire. I think the easy answer for me personally would be my mom, just because I know how much she's gone through in her life, and I know how, the things that she's experienced could easily have traumatized and taken a lot of people down, but she just keeps on ticking and she stays positive and she's, you know, she takes her licks and keeps on trucking, you know, and she's so, she's such a social butterfly. It's so well loved by anybody who has the pleasure of meeting her that, I think my mom would be my answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Those are all really awesome things. And yeah, I think my person would probably be similar. I've got an old professor that I really look up to, and I've often sought counsel from because he's kind of the only wise elder that I'm like directly connected to. So I'd say I admire him a pretty big amount.
Yeah. Okay. On what occasion do you lie?
Goodness. Trying to be polite to people often involves some fudging of the truth.
Sure. Being polite or... I mean, even if you're just... I mean, like they say, a lie by omission is still a lie, right? So...
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair answer and a fair question. Lying does a lot of good sometimes, whether that people want to admit it or not. It's a fact, so. who or what is the greatest love of your life?
That one's pretty easy. It's music. There's nothing else. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoy my mind-altering substances, and I enjoy my passions of the flesh. But music is the only thing that is just so there and has been so there for so long.
Yeah, I love that. What do you consider your greatest achievement?
Continuing to continue is probably the one. I mean, not to make it sound more grim than it is, but sometimes it'd be grim. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like things have probably, that answer is a little bit more influenced by the aftermath of 2020 than maybe answers I might have given prior to that, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that answer would resonate with a lot of people, so, you know, glad you shared. I'll ask you maybe one or two more.
Okie dokie.
Okay, what are your favorite names?
That's an interesting one. For some reason, I like Alex a lot. Yeah, I feel like there are more, but again, blaming it on 2020 and having stayed inside for so damn long.
Yeah, that's the one that comes, that sticks out to you, is Alex.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, it's gender neutral, and I don't know, I like, I mean, my son's middle name is Alexander.
So. Oh, yeah. That's, yeah. Alexander is a good name.
Yeah.
IMO.
I don't know why, and it sucks because the name has gotten sort of ruined in a way that only, like, you know, top 40 radio can do. But I've always really loved the name Delilah. Or like Lila, like a, you know, a variation of it. I like that name a lot. I don't know why. Just like it.
It is pretty.
Yeah. And last but not least, well, there's two sides to this. First off, what is your favorite, or what is your motto? And what is your favorite curse word?
Damn
is your favorite?
No. No, I am balking now because I am haunted by the stupid memory of my damn high school yearbook epithet. Is that the right word? Whatever, the quote that I chose to put in that just because, oh man, it hits different on this side of the aging process, but it also still rings true. I just wish I could rephrase it. I think the exact quote was some emo bullshit that was along the lines of, to truly know happiness, one must equally know sorrow.
Okay.
But looking back on it and seeing how that thread has stayed connected through my life, wanting to experience the fullness of what is there in the human experience and the fullness of myself, rather than trying to just be one tiny little part of myself and getting bored of that and trying to be some other tiny little part of myself, that's kind of what I'm getting at.
That's major Gemini energy right there.
Indeed it is.
I mean, wanting to experience both sides of human existence is big Gemini energy. And also, just like getting distracted and living in that moment and finding yourself discontent and moving on to the next thing or whatever is kind of big gem energy. So,
yeah.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. I mean, one day when we get to talk about Gemini more, the twins will be interesting just because I've got some cool insight on them. But it's like, yeah. It's boring being the one twin, or it gets old being the one twin, or whatever, and luckily, there's the other side we get to go inhabit.
Yeah. Okay, so what's your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Everybody says fuck.
It's just such a good word. It's so useful and versatile.
It is. Yes, yeah, absolutely. For the record, I have always said and will always probably say until something changes my mind. For some reason, I cannot get over variety is the spice of life as my motto. I truly believe that. The only other thing that comes close is there has to be a better way. Mm. That's the only other thing that I have said over and over and over again in my life is there's got to be a better way, you know?
I really like that.
I was talking with my husband a little bit about what my motto would be, and like we had to laugh because I am 100% that person who like sees that there are three new like Frito-Lay chip flavors out and I have to get all three because if I don't, I'm gonna regret not trying them. Like and even if I absolutely positively hate the flavors, I'm still gonna buy it, and that the rest of that bag is gonna go in the trash because I gotta try it. Like, how do you not? How do you walk by that and not say, of course I want to try chicken and waffle flavored potato chips?
Oh, yeah. All right. Amen to that. That's, yes.
Yes. And, I mean, I like to be a little bit different, and you might enjoy this curse word. I don't say it often enough because I'm just not the kind of person who goes around calling people names, but I really love cock knocker.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard that one before, honestly.
Really? Makes me. I can tell you exactly where I got it from. It's the first time I ever heard it was in The Stand, the movie.
Oh, like the old school one?
Yeah. No, wow. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Not The Stand. Sorry. We'll blame that on COVID brain. Stand by Me, the movie.
Oh, that's funny that they're both still Stephen King.
Yes, I know.
And yeah. All right, I guess I have heard that one before. It's just been a long ass time since I've seen that movie.
Right. Yeah. It's. I mean, and of course, it's set in like I don't know what 1950 something, and so it's probably like supposed to be a nod to the times or whatever that it's set in, but. Ever since I heard it, I'm like, ah, what a fun word, cockknocker.
That is fun.
Speaking of fun words, do we want to know my fun word of the week?
Yes. What is it?
I started following this guy on TikTok. His handle is Dandy and Friends. And he does, like, Victorian, Baroque, like, he's always in full-blown Victorian, like, Baroque French garb or whatever, like, with the powdered wig and the white face and the pink cheeks and the little beauty mark and, you know, all the, like, frilly sleeves and the fan to fan himself. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, that's extra as fuck. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. He does, like, etiquette and, like, lessons and he does his own little word of the day. Anyways, he gave me this word is courtesy of him. The word is frippet. FRIPPET. Frippet.
Frippet. Okay, yes. That sounds like it could either be some really small detail of some of that ornate shit you just described, or an insult maybe also.
it technically means it's an old-fashioned informal term for a frivolous or flamboyant young person.
Wow.
Yeah.
So kind of like a dandy, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, because his name is Dandy. Dandy and Friends. Yeah.
Wow.
It's sort of an affectionate term for somebody who's, like, saucy and young and, you know.
Yeah. A little frippet, okay.
Yeah. It's a fun one, right? Frippet.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Well, we have waxed on this episode for almost 2 hours. We covered a lot. We'll cover it some more as we continue, because there's a lot that needs to be said and gone over on these topics. But I think hopefully we sort of, you know, covered a lot and gave people an idea about what to expect. And next week, I'm excited to get into our first sign of the zodiac.
Yeah. Yep. Remember to rest and digest. That was a lot of information, but don't worry. The beautiful thing about cyclical things is we keep coming back and back and back, and shit makes more and more sense every time we do.
Yep. So your best bet is to stay listening. keep following us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. We'll keep covering these topics as we continue, and as we go through signs, it'll become more clear once we can break down those elements individually based on that sign. So we'll talk about, you know, the ruling planets again for each sign, and traits and characteristics and all that stuff. So yeah, I think that's it, right?
Yeah, right on.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me again.
Absolutely, thank you for having me, and until next time, let's keep searching for that cosmic tea.
Hell yes. The Gemini Podcast is written and researched by both me and Alice. All of our sound production and editing is done by Alice Alistair, and all of our music, including our theme, comes from Uncertainty, Alice's one-of-a-kind solo act. Alice is also available for personalized natal chart readings. To learn more about availability and rates, reach out to us at thegemandipodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay curious, Stargazers.